Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland. So, how you doing?
Money meltdown. Major investment bank for 158 years. Lehman Brothers goes bankrupt.
The market is very shaky right now. They were saying invest in Hills Brother Coffee, right? And the guy was saying, what do you mean, the coffee stock? He said, no, a coffee can. Take your money and put it in a can.
It's pretty scary. My family has their money in Merrill Lynch, and I called to find out how it's insured.
I have to reassess all my 401k assets. That was my schedule to do later today.
If you're liking that coffee can idea, you may also be planning to go out and supersize your mattress this weekend, right? Well, stay cool. You've got questions, we've got answers. Next on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. Wall Street played quite a game of red light, green light with all of us this week. Green light, it's okay, the government will bail us out. Red light, oh no it won't, and it wouldn't matter anyway. What say we all run for the hills? Red light, don't do that just yet. I'm Tess Vigeland, this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com.
Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy this week. Oh, wait, no, that's old news. Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch this week. No, that's old, too. The government spent $85 billion to bail out AIG. Nope. Old news. The government's going to insure money market mutual funds. Okay, that's a little more current. Short selling is illegal. Getting warmer. The government is possibly going to buy up all those bad mortgages and all that bad debt in the financial sector and put it in a nuclear bunker until it's safe to come out. Yeah, now we're current. And the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bailout must have been, what, a couple of years ago? Okay, time for some perspective. And who better to get it from than personal finance veteran Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard. And Mr. Bogle, if I may ask, what did you do with your money this week?
Nothing. I am a stay-the-course kind of person. I haven't changed my asset allocation since the early part of 2000, that the market ran the market high, when I became fairly conservative, about 65% in bonds, 35% in stocks. And I didn't change it when the market went down. I didn't change it when the market went up. And I won't be changing it today or tomorrow. I'm a stay-the-course kind of person, as we say down at Vanguard.
That's the advice that everybody seems to be giving and getting. Let me ask a very basic question of you, though, a market veteran. Given all that's happened, especially over the last couple of weeks, why should anyone hand their money over to Wall Street?
The answer to your question is you should not hand your money over to Wall Street unequivocally. And what you should do is own American business. And you have to buy that by buying stocks through Wall Street, own every company in America, and maybe a few companies around the world, and an index fund that holds all of those stocks, so you're totally diversified. And once you do that, Wall Street can't touch you. So whatever return on capital those businesses earn will be yours.
It does seem, however, that this panic, if you will, if we've reached that point, has gone beyond Wall Street companies. Of course, we've had, you know, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, the takeover of Merrill Lynch, but AIG needed a government rescue, and there's a possibility that more banks will go down, including the largest savings and loan in the country. People are really wondering about the safety of their money wherever they put it. What do you say to them?
First of all, if you're not worried today, you're really not paying much attention. This is a financial crisis we're having in the United States. We might as well not mince any words on that. However, the crisis is largely at the moment a financial crisis, and it will be resolved. It may be resolved in a very painful way for investors. The government's not going to bail us out of anything because the government has no money. We, the people, are going to bail us out of something because that's where the money from this actually comes, out of our pockets. But in the long run, business is about investing and earning a return on capital. Corporations, as a group, will make money over time, is a very high degree of certainty. Corporations will grow at about the rate America grows. There's a very high rate of certainty in that. While we all think there is liquidity for us, we can get our money out whenever we want. If we all want it at the same time, it is not there. That's the reality of life.
And we should remind folks that there are backstops to banks and brokerages, the FDIC, SIPC.
Absolutely. If you have less than $100,000 in a single account, in a single institution, you don't have to worry. You're insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Company in a single banking institution. And so, you know, you could have a retirement account, your wife could have an account, you could have an account. And if each of them are $99,000, every one of them, you're insured up to almost $300,000. So it's not going to affect most people.
And if you have money in an investment house like Lehman, there are protections there as well?
They call it SIPC, Securities Investment Protection Corporation or something like that. So your accounts at a brokerage firm or at a mutual fund firm are protected, not against change in value, but against anything taking the capital investment, whatever that value may be, away from you.
What do you think of this idea of a resolution trust corporation type entity that would essentially buy up all the bad debt out there and put taxpayers on the hook for it? That doesn't make Uncle Sam a very wise investor, does it?
Well, in principle, I like the idea. They compare it with taking over the savings and loans back a couple of decades ago. That actually, interestingly enough, they made money on that. They bought these things at depressed prices, and eventually, I believe, the federal government actually, or we, the people, made money on that, and that is possible here. I guess what worries me a little bit here is there doesn't seem to be anybody overall in charge. I mean, when the Secretary of the Treasury goes to see Congress in the dead of night, two nights in a week, one wonders if there isn't a little ad hoc thinking going on here.
Why do you think we're hearing so many comparisons to the Great Depression this week? And are those accurate?
The Great Depression was an economic event preceded by a financial event. Yes, it's worth thinking about. In this sense, the 1929 stock market was the most speculative stock market in the history of the country. And turnover of stock was 140% a year of all stocks in the U.S. in 1929. Last year, it was double that. 280%. Whereas this era is twice as speculative as the most speculative era we have ever had before. So, of course, we should worry about that. Now, will that lead into a financial crisis? It does, and it did. Will it lead into an economic crisis? I don't think that handwriting is on the wall right now.
One final question. We have had some questions this week from listeners worried about mutual fund companies being the next to topple. And I feel obligated to ask you, as the founder of Vanguard, are you confident that mutual fund companies are in good shape right now, including yours?
I don't think I dare speak for anybody else's company. There's certainly some very good mutual fund companies out there that I can't imagine are in trouble. But I can speak to Vanguard, and that is... We have had no big cash outflows. We had cash inflows every day last week. But in these markets, that does not mean, I want to be very clear on this, that we couldn't have big fluctuations in the value of our equity funds, for example, because they're largely indexed to the market, and that's the way to do it. But if the market goes down, our index funds, stock index funds will go down, and when the market goes up, they will go up commensurately. But I would tell people in these times, try not to peak. It doesn't do you any good. If you're investing for 20 years, what does it matter what your investment does on September 19th of 2008?
John Bogle is the founder of Vanguard and author most recently of The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, good to be with you. I hope it helps your listeners.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thriven.com. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to the success of small businesses and nonprofits. You can learn about email marketing at constantcontact.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
And this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. It's time for the Straight Story. And with me, as always, is our own economics editor, Chris Farrell. Chris, tell me what I'm supposed to be feeling right now.
That you're a survivor.
Okay.
And that we will survive this. But this is also an unprecedented period of time. It is not hyperbole. This is the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression.
Given that, what did you do with your money this week?
Nothing. As far as my retirement savings plan, absolutely nothing, because I'm satisfied with the way I have my diversified portfolio set up and my goals haven't changed. And in terms of my discretionary savings, some money goes into an S&P 500 index fund and some goes into a money market mutual fund. And I've actually increased the amount of money that goes into both.
You know, I have heard the question this week, aside from some of the panic that is going on out there, there are people who are saying, look, why should I be worried about this? This is something that people with a whole lot of money invested in the stock market need to worry about. How does this translate from Wall Street to Main Street?
I think there's several implications of what's happening on Wall Street. Why is the federal government working so hard to stem this crisis? Well, it's because our economy lives on credit. And what the regulators are afraid is that the credit system will freeze up. No one's going to be able to borrow. No one's going to want to lend. And all of a sudden, pink slips start getting handed out. So that's the nightmare scenario.
So it's really all about unemployment.
Yes. Our economy is all about employment. That's why the action is happening. Right now, it's remarkable that we have as low an unemployment rate as we do. I think one of the clear implications of what's happening right now, I'm assuming that it will be contained, the financial crisis, and I think it will be contained. But the economy is clearly going to weaken. Consumers are going to spend less. Businesses are going to lay off more workers. That dynamic is pretty much baked in clay.
You know, we are getting some listener feedback that borders on, I think it's fair to say, panic. But if we are not truly there yet, why is this feeling suddenly so pervasive? And what do you think would be a valid point at which to kind of say, OMG?
Well, open up your window. Well, most offices you can't, but go outside then if you can't open up your window.
Right.
And yell OMG as often as you want. And then go back to your desk. Take a deep breath. I think there are a couple things that are going on. The panic is understandable because it's not ending. Okay, we had Bear Stearns. It was supposed to be over with. It didn't end. Merrill Lynch feels so pressured that it sells itself. AIG. It keeps going on. People get nervous. I mean, the dark humor that's going on around the workplace. Will I ever be able to retire? I get that question all the time.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, this has been going on for about a year. And my suspicion is that most people are actually in better condition financially than they think they are. But there's just so many unknowns and there's so many risks that are out there that people are wondering, well, my emergency savings is in a money market mutual fund. Is this safe? I mean, is it really safe? And those are good questions. But at the same time, panic is the wrong response.
All right, Chris. And as we said, we'll be back with Getting Personal later in the show, where we'll be talking about all the questions that we've been getting this week about the situation. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Tess.
In the midst of all this craziness, we do have to remember that the show must go on. And that's especially true if an entire movie crew has taken over every room in your home.
Suddenly it becomes the living room, the kitchen, the bedrooms. Oh, I don't have my house.
We'll take a breather from the market meltdown after we answer your questions about it. Next on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland. Wild swings on Wall Street, like the ones we saw this week, often prompt what's referred to as a flight to safety. People move their coin to what they think are sure things. Gold is one of them, and people poured money into the shiny stuff this week. U.S. Treasuries are another, and so are money market mutual funds. At least they were, until one of the biggest, the Reserve Primary Fund, dipped below a dollar this week. Putnam Investments actually closed its prime money market fund. But by Friday, the government announced it will insure all those deposits. Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott is here with some details. And Amy, what's the genesis of these funds?
The first money market mutual fund was created back in 1970 by a guy named Bruce Bent. But basically, it's a mutual fund that invests in what are considered low-risk securities, until recently anyway. And it's a way for investors to make a little interest with easy access to their money, and they're very popular. They've since grown to around $3.5 trillion in assets.
And that's why we often hear them referred to as, you know, basically as good as cash, right?
That's right.
There is a difference between a money market mutual fund and a money market deposit account. Tell us what that is.
Right. And it's confusing because sometimes the same bank may sell both.
Right.
A money market deposit account is a type of savings account that typically pays a higher interest rate than a regular savings account in exchange for a larger balance and some restrictions on things like the number of transactions you can make.
Mm-hmm.
Money market accounts are insured by the FDIC for up to $100,000 per account holder or $250,000 for some retirement accounts. Now, money market funds are not FDIC insured. That being said, you know, as you said, investors have generally thought them to be about as safe as cash. And that's because it's almost unheard of for their value to fall below a dollar a share.
But in fact, that's exactly what we've seen happen this week. And this is, I think the term for it is breaking the buck.
Yes, actually, a few funds have broken the buck. Remember, I mentioned the father of money market funds, Bruce Bent.
Mm-hmm.
This week, the fund that he started, the Reserve Primary Fund, told its investors their shares were worth less than a dollar. The fund had invested in Lehman Brothers debt. And when Lehman, the investment bank, filed for bankruptcy, that fund lost a lot of money. And since that announcement, the primary fund's manager, Reserve Management, has said that investors in some of its other funds may lose money, too. And Tess, as far as we know, this only happened once before in the nearly 40-year history of money market mutual funds. 14 years ago, investors in a small institutional money fund called Community Bankers lost about 4 cents on the dollar.
Well, Amy, at this point, given that the government has said it will insure these money market mutual funds, what's next?
Well, yeah, I think this should go a long way toward reassuring investors. We had another fund run by Putnam Investments close this week because investors were pulling out money. Then on Friday, the federal government announced it would set aside as much as $50 billion to protect money market fund investors from losses. For a year, the Treasury Department will basically provide insurance, drawing on a fund that dates back to the Great Depression. The money market funds will have to pay a fee to participate in the program, and then if that fund breaks the buck, investors will be made whole.
All right. Marketplace's Amy Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, it is time for Getting Personal. And yeah, we have just a few questions to answer this week, Chris. Chris Farrell is back with me, as always. Can we take a deep breath, first of all, just together? Here we go. Okay, everybody
yes.
Feel a little better now. And we've done things a little differently this week. We just went ahead and pre-recorded the questions, and we've got a lot of emails to get through. So let's go ahead and just get to this thing. First of all, Randall in Williamstown, Massachusetts, is wondering about what he calls kryptonite. It's an AIG policy that he is very tempted to cash in right now.
As an AIG policyholder, should I be getting out now? If too many of us take that view, aren't we just kicking AIG when it's down?
I wouldn't get out of AIG if I were a policyholder. You know, forget about whether you kick them when they're down, but is it a good move financially for you? And I would say no.
So should something happen to you and you are insured by AIG, you're going to get a payout.
You're going to get a payout. I think it would be a big mistake for people to panic over the AIG insurance company. If you're a stockholder of AIG itself, $170 billion of stock over the past year has vaporized. But that's a different story.
Okay, we did have a question actually about that. So there's the answer to that listener who wrote in asking about his AIG stock. All right, Renee in St. Paul writes in, and she and her husband are 32 and 31 years old, and their retirement investments, a SEP IRA and mutual funds, are with Wells Fargo. Now, this is not a bank that we have heard anything about in terms of it being in trouble, but they noticed recently that there's a disclaimer on their form stating that their investments are not FDIC insured. Now, Chris, this is not a surprise. Investments are not FDIC insured, but they want to know if there's any way to know that their investments are safe.
Depends what you mean by safe. If you're investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, there's no FDIC insurance behind it or its equivalent. You're at risk to the market.
In other words, you can lose all of your money if the stock goes down. But the money that you have in that account, should the bank or the investing institution go down, you will be made whole.
That's correct. And there's one other additional layer of protection, which is called the Securities Investors Protection Corporation, or SIPC. That's the way we refer to it. What SIPC protects you up to $500,000 is in case there's fraud or malfeasance.
Okay. Well, while we are on the issue of banks, let's go to a question from Clayton.
My girlfriend and I own a house in Madison, Wisconsin. The bank where we have both our savings and our mortgage is having severe financial problems. While we know that our savings are FDIC insured, we don't know what will happen to our mortgage if our bank goes bankrupt. Can our new lender change the terms of our loan?
Okay, good question. What happens to your mortgage if it's owned by a bank that goes under?
Okay, let's say the bank does go under. Maintain your mortgage payments. Just continue to send your check in. So what the FDIC will do is it will say to another financial institution, hey, you want Clayton's mortgage? Hey, this is a good asset. And they're making their payments. And then it's transferred to another institution. The one thing you do have to look at, do they change some fees? Do they add some fees? Do they subtract some fees? They might change those terms. So you got to watch that carefully. I would not myself be shopping for refinancing in the current environment that we're in. I'd stick with my financial institution. Even if it's sick, just make those mortgage payments.
All right. Beverly in Cincinnati wants to test a piece of advice that she's heard you use before and see if it holds for these times as well.
Is it still safe to keep our emergency savings in a money market account, or should we switch it to an FDIC insured savings account?
Depends how important it is to protect this money from all risk. If this is your really safe money, you want to take absolutely zero risk, you're under $100,000 into that FDIC account. However, if you want to take a fractional risk, a very minor risk, go with the Chris Farrell standard for investing in a money market mutual fund. First, brand name, national institution with deep pockets that can support the money fund if it gets into trouble. Secondly, go for the really conservative option among the money market mutual fund options that the firm offers. In other words, one that's primarily made up of U.S. Treasury bills.
All right, let's go to one more email question. And Charlotte writes in from Livingston, Montana, and wants to know, her 401k is at Fidelity, and she's wondering what would happen if Fidelity went under. So, you know, we've talked about the fact that banks have FDIC insurance, brokerages, you have SIPC protection. But what about Vanguard, T. Rowe Price? What if one of these goes down? What's the equivalent at a mutual fund company?
Your main protection is that your money is in a segregated account that owns those stocks, those bonds, the mutual fund. So if the company, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, whomever you want to name, gets into trouble, your account still exists, and then it will be bought or transferred to another financial institution. That is your primary protection. With segregated accounts, there is protection against the parent company, the brand name, going under. All these institutions have lots of insurance, much of it bought from Lloyd's of London from around the world. So there's lots of additional insurance on top of that.
Well, as I said, we've had lots of calls and emails from you, and we'll get to more of those with Chris a little bit later in the show. In the meantime, if you've got a question, do give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY, and we spell that M-O-N-Y. Or hit our website, it's marketplace.org, and look for the link that says Getting Personal.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Here's a little distraction, since you can't cash in your stocks over the weekend. Not that you should. You may as well watch the Emmy Awards. Little gold statues will go out to the best actors, writers, and directors for television. But what about best performance for a house? like that two-story colonial Don Draper comes home to in Mad Men. TV shows and commercials and movies often use private homes as sets, and studios pay big money for the privilege. Marketplace's Eve Troe found out that homeowners do earn that money.
This summer, Lisa Hutchins rented her house to NBC's Heroes for a week. While the sci-fi drama filmed inside, Lisa tiptoed around huge crates outside in her driveway. She had to whisper, quiet on the set.
How many people are at your house right now?
I've lost count. Yesterday we had a party scene, which I didn't even know was going to happen. 40 to 50 extras, above and beyond crew. I would say there's maybe 30 crew here minimum. Those are the ones I can see. I haven't gone in the house recently, so there could be another 30, 40 in there too.
It was day four of self-imposed exile for Lisa, her husband, and two kids. They camped in the guest house above the garage. Most of their belongings were in the garage, moved there by the set decorators. The family relocated on short notice. Lisa says shoot dates can move around a lot, and you're never really sure what's going to happen. Producers say they just need the dining room, but to shoot the dining room, they have to put tons of camera, lighting, and sound gear somewhere else.
Suddenly it becomes the living room, the kitchen, the bedrooms. Oh, I don't have my house.
And Lisa's neighbors don't have their neighborhood. Big rigs, star trailers, and catering trucks line the block. Huge generators roar. To keep the peace, Lisa gives her neighbors as much notice as she can. When the shoot's over, she sends gift baskets. All this effort for a few minutes of one episode of one TV show.
I'm glad we got to set the chassis up.
Spoiler for Heroes fans, this season you'll see a man and a woman argue briefly in Lisa's elegant foyer. Network TV shoots like this pay about $3,000 a day. Movie shoots can climb to $10,000. You can rent your house for 14 days of filming a year, tax-free. Most owners don't reach that limit. And, like Lisa, they don't book their own gigs. Her house has an agent. David Hatfield at Cast Locations handles about 1,000 properties around Los Angeles. He recommends homeowners leave during a shoot.
It's kind of like a circus coming to town. You know, the tent goes and everybody goes and everything goes right back where it was.
That's part of Hatfield's job, to make sure the circus cleans up. He also draws up contracts, takes glamour shots of the property, and shops it to location scouts. Like most agents, he takes a commission, usually 30%. Not all film shoots take over the whole house. Hatfield says producers often just need a facade, a backyard, or a fantastic laundry room.
Nice windows, view of a garden, you know.
Like a detergent commercial.
Exactly, Tide and all that, you know. Some people it's the basement, an attic, a greenhouse, a treehouse.
When Hatfield saw Sherry and Maury Peckett's house, he knew he had a star. Because it's a time machine. Original wood paneling, custom furniture, flagstone fireplace. It played perfect in Zodiac, last year's crime thriller set in 1960s San Francisco. Sherry Peckett loved that shoot.
Let me entertain you, you know.
She got her picture taken with the film's stars, Anthony Edwards and Mark Ruffalo. She got paid twice. They rented her furniture for the reshoots. And that was just one of more than 20 TV shows, movies, and commercials shot at the Peckett's house. ESPN, White Castle, an indie movie with Muriel Hemingway. Sherry and her husband are retired, so no schedule to interrupt.
At this stage in our life, this is fun for me. I look at this more as a cocktail party, and this is their house for the day.
Sometimes, Sherry says, the crew leaves the house better than they found it. Fresh paint, landscaping, maybe a lamp or two. But what she'd really love is a shoot where they'll dig her a swimming pool. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace Money.
And this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Any of you Hollywood types looking for a scenic block right now? You know, maybe a yellow ranch house with a couple of cats, an adorable dog, a pack of squirrels in the backyard? Yeah, that's my house. What? Yeah, it's about time I got some money out of it, right? Meanwhile, on this week's A Day in the Work Life, we'll meet someone who dresses up another important feature in the movie biz.
Okay, great. My name is Alexandra Welker. I'm a costume designer in the film industry.
Some stellar acid wash.
The costume designer creates the look of every single character in a film. I have to contend with all of the things that happen in the course of a story. If there's a stunt involved, you know, how many outfits does the character need of the same outfit, because the stuntman needs four of them because he's going to jump off a building and something might get ripped.
This will be a great double for that bar fight scene.
The costumes that I put together for a film are a mix of things that I've designed and had made specifically for the film. If you had, say, a big, you know, New York City street scene that's supposed to be the middle of winter, and of course you're filming on a back lot or downtown Los Angeles in July, it's hard to find winter coats for everyone in the stores, first and foremost. It also would be prohibitively expensive. A good costume is one that communicates as much as possible about the character and what he or she is going through. On a secondary level, if I can do that in a way that makes the actor feel comfortable, it's really important. Cha-cha-cha. I would hate for any of my cast to be distracted from what they're trying to do because their shoes are pinching. Costume designers, like all the other film positions these days, are freelance positions. Cha-cha-cha. The salary for a costume designer per week can range from probably around $1,700 to $2,000 a week, and the high end is probably somewhere up around $10,000 a week for people that are working on really the, you know, A-list, mega blockbuster kind of movies. I'm not at the 10 grand mark yet, but I'm not at the low end either. I'm working my way towards the 10 grand mark, so. I love going to the movies. I love the experience. I watch a lot of movies at home on TV, but I love sitting in the darkened cinema. And even though there's a part of my brain as a filmmaker that, you know, is recognizing, oh, that's an interesting camera angle, there's another, most of me gets completely sucked into the story. So I still, after 15 years in this business, walk on set, and I'm excited to be there, because I think movie making is a really magical process. And I think that people like the movies because of all the different art forms. It's the one that seems the most real. You know, you look at a painting and you can see the paint, you can see the brush stroke. But for a lot of us, we look at film, and even if we know it's fake, it's still, it seems like real life.
That was costume designer Alexandra Welker. Want to learn more about her work? Check out our website, marketplace.org. This week's A Day in the Work Life was reported by Francesca Segray. Coming up, we look into another really important group of actors, the political kind. And while politicians don't measure their success by box office receipts, they count other receipts very carefully, the ones from donors. But maybe they aren't the ones who should be doing the counting.
And occasionally members of Congress do use campaign money for what really seem like personal expenses.
I am shocked, shocked. We're on the trail of political donations next, and more of your questions about this week's financial turmoil on Wall Street on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland, and we continue with our ongoing coverage about this week's financial headaches. We'll get to more of your questions about Wall Street in a moment. But first, our phones weren't the only ones ringing off the hook this week. Our email inbox wasn't the only one that was clogged with questions. Stockbrokers across the country were busy talking to nervous clients. We managed to find a couple who were kind enough to pause from the mayhem and talk to us about how their clients were doing this week.
My name is Andrew Hutchison, financial advisor with Edward Jones Investments.
My name is Alice Zalman. I'm a financial consultant at Charles Schwab.
My day began on Monday morning with a phone call at 5:30 in the morning from one of my colleagues stating that there's a lot of crazy things going on in the market.
This week, people were concerned as they're hearing names of some of our most well-known financial institutions disappearing and creating questions that they perhaps never thought about.
Concerned that their money was not going to be there, concerned that the market was going to be gone, concerned that, you know, everything was going to be, you know, Armageddon and it would never be the same.
People never thought to ask, are my money market funds insured? How are my accounts protected? What would happen if my broker-dealer failed? These are conversations that a year and a half, 2 years ago, we never would have had.
Sometimes investments don't behave the way that we think that they should or they would.
One of the mistakes that individual investors tend to make is overanalyzing situations and letting emotion come into play.
We always discuss the long-term prospects of this money, how the market contracts and expands. Their retirement savings that month might go down, but it's not lost until they sell the actual investment.
This volatility absolutely reinforces the importance of remaining well-diversified.
Oh, I think that anybody that can stay the course here, they'll be well rewarded in the long run. We've seen this movie before. It's just a different cast of characters.
Andrew Hutchinson is with Edward Jones here in Los Angeles. Alice Zollman works for Schwab in New York. We are back with more Getting Personal, and with me once again is our own Chris Farrell. And Chris, a lot of people right now are wondering how long to hold on as these institutions are experiencing these troubled times. So let's go to David in Portland, and he recently took out a home equity line of credit with Washington Mutual, and now he wants to know if he's in danger of not getting his money's worth.
I am worried that because of Washington Mutual's financial troubles, they will not be able to extend the full line of credit available to me when I need it. Should I take the money out now?
So he's got this home equity line of credit with WaMu, and now he wants to know if there's a possible danger of not getting his money's worth.
Yes, it's a real risk. First of all, look at a home equity line of credit as an insurance policy. Is there a reason why you believe in a reasonably short period of time that you need to draw on that insurance policy? If it is, then borrow against it now, and then over the next couple of months, you're going to be paying a premium for that insurance policy, and it's called the interest charge.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if you don't have to use that insurance policy, pay it back. But I don't like the idea of people borrowing just because the line of credit might be canceled that they might possibly need, or they just don't like the idea of the line of credit being canceled. So if you don't really need the money, don't borrow against it, because I never want people to borrow unless they have to.
So basically, there is the possibility that you would lose a home equity line of credit if your bank is taken over, say, by the FDIC?
Yes, and then they sell it to another bank. They turn it over, and the other bank says, you know what? We don't want to be in that business anymore.
Okay. Richard in Pensacola, Florida, writes in, and his question is, how do you know that the FDIC can retain its own liquidity and be able to insure accounts up to $100,000. This has come up in the Washington Mutual question. This is the nation's largest savings and loan, and FDIC taking over it means that that wipes out a lot of what the FDIC has on hand. So what happens?
Don't worry about it. Congress, the White House, the U.S. Treasury will simply write a check. Whatever the FDIC needs, the FDIC will get.
All right, there you go, Richard. Short and sweet. Ken from Northfield, Minnesota wrote in, and here's another question, Chris, about AIG. We've already addressed the fact that your insurance needs will be met, but he wants to know how safe his 403B account is with AIG retirement. He's wondering, should he be out looking for a job 6 years into retirement?
His account is safe. Again, there are a lot of protections with retirement accounts that are segregated away from the problems that are happening with the parent company. Now, the value of his retirement savings plan is down. That's a pretty safe bet. But he doesn't have to worry about losing all his money because AIG has been nationalized by the U.S. government. Of course, there's another way of looking at it. His retirement savings plan may be safer than it's ever been because the Federal Reserve is now running your retirement savings plan.
Well, speaking of nationalized, we remember, a long time ago, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac had the same thing happen to them. And Dick in St. Paul had a question about a different May. Another government lending program.
With all the problems with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, should I expect the same from my Ginnie Mae securities? And I'm wondering, how do Ginnie Mae and Fannie Mae investments differ?
So Ginnie Mae, this is another agency that provides government backing for mortgage loans, and Dick owns bonds issued by Ginnie Mae. Should he be worried?
No. And have you heard anything about Ginnie Mae?
No, not a word.
Absolutely not. Now, the first thing is, Ginnie Mae already had the full faith and credit of the federal government, which, by the way, all that means is it was a government agency. It's a government-owned corporation. What it does is it guarantees bonds that are backed by mortgages issued by typically the Federal Housing Administration, the FHA, or the Veterans Administration. which, by the way, because it was a government agency or is a government agency, and because the guarantee is explicit, it has tougher underwriting standards than either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So, no protection against fluctuations in the market value of the bonds that are guaranteed by Ginnie Mae, but there have been no problems really associated with Ginnie Mae.
Well, that's just really nice to hear, isn't it?
It is.
There's actually a company that doesn't need to be taken over by the federal government.
It was never sold to the public. It never went and became a shareholder-owned company on Wall Street.
Well, let's finish off with Stephen in Nashville, Tennessee, and he has several medium-term bonds with Lehman, and he wonders how those bonds will be affected by the bankruptcy filing.
Now, I'm assuming what he's saying is that these are bonds issued by Lehman Brothers.
Yes.
And he's just getting in line with lots of other creditors. I think the last time I looked, Lehman bonds were trading about 35 cents on the dollar.
Ouch.
And he's just one of a long list of creditors. There are more than $600 billion in bonds that are associated or tied to Lehman Brothers. This is a huge debt burden. It's an enormous bankruptcy. Let the professionals decide what's going to happen.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for Getting Personal this week, but we are available to you online. Chris's blog is up and running all week long. And of course, marketplace.org never shuts down. You'll find the Getting Personal link there. Or call us at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Chris, thank you so much for being the voice of reason this weekend. Much appreciated.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Marketplace Money is supported by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant-making and educational funding. Online at finrafoundation.org.
Well, not everyone's week was as bad as Lehman Brothers. This week, the Obama campaign announced it raised a record $66 million in August. The McCain campaign raised $47 million. That's his best month of fundraising. But what's the story behind those donations? Marketplace's Steve Henn has been following the political money trail for us. And Steve, let me ask first, what exactly do most people expect when they make a political contribution?
When you donate to a candidate, you're usually, I mean, most people are donating to their election campaign fund. How it ends up being spent really depends on who you give it to and how they decide to spend their money. But if you give your money to, say, a congressional candidate who doesn't have a very tough race, The question about where the money ends up is actually much more complicated.
They can give that to other candidates, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah. They can give it to other candidates or they can give it to their national party.
Is there any chance that my money could go toward, you know, a family vacation for one of these candidates?
If you're giving the money actually to a campaign account, a family vacation is unlikely, but a salary for a family member is perfectly possible. And occasionally members of Congress do use campaign money for what really seem like personal expenses. One congressman from New York was paying for his gym memberships with his campaign money.
Well, you definitely want your congressman to be buff, right?
Well, that was his argument. He said that, you know, running for office, it was important that he was trim. The FEC didn't buy that. Now, if instead of giving your money to a campaign, you gave money to a leadership PAC, it really could go to a vacation and often does.
So basically, you have no idea where your money is going when you contribute to a campaign. Is that what you're telling me?
You might not, but you can look. And if you're serious about giving money to a politician, it's not a bad idea. The real avenue for, you know, abuse here are so-called leadership PACs. These are sort of second campaign accounts that many members of Congress raise. Now, most people in America have never heard of these accounts, and you know, the vast majority never give to them. But there are almost no restrictions on how a member of Congress can spend the money that's given to a leadership PAC account.
Steve, what's the difference between giving to a candidate directly and giving it to a group that supports the candidate, something like Move On or 4 years ago, you know, the Swift Boat Veterans?
It depends on the group. Generally, if you have a lot of money to spend, there are limits to how much money you can give to an individual candidate. The way groups organize themselves, they sort of found an end run around some of the contribution limits. So you can write much bigger checks to those groups. You can also write much bigger checks to state political parties, the national parties. So if you're a serious giver, if you have serious money to spend, this is a way you can give more. But if you're just an average person who has political convictions you believe in and you want to support, I think the danger with giving to an outside group is that they might waste your money. So it's worth taking a look at their public filings and see how much money they just burn through.
Is there an average amount that people seem to be comfortable giving to candidates?
Yes, nothing. This election's been remarkable in that literally millions of people have given money to political candidates, and that's really never happened before. But even with that sort of huge groundswell of participation that we've heard so much about, you're talking about 2, maybe 3 million people who have written checks this year. That's less than 1% of the population of the United States. Even within that universe of people who have given this year, it's a small fraction of those people who give the most money. It's the people who are willing to write a $2,300 check. And even more than that, the people who campaigns really go after are folks who have groups of friends who are willing to write $2,300 checks again and again and again. Those are the people that every successful campaign has identified, cultivated, and is going after.
Marketplace's Steve Henn has been joining us to talk about political contributions and you. Thanks so much for your help, Steve.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. All right, I don't know about you, but I drank my first cup of coffee on Monday morning to the Lehman News. By my second cup, B of A had taken over Merrill. By my 10th cup or so on Friday, Wall Street looked nothing like it did a week ago, and my head was spinning, and I vowed not to look at my retirement accounts for 5 years, and I told my parents I really hoped that they were mostly in T-bills, and then I said, I gotta talk to Marketplace's Bob Moon. He's our senior business correspondent / market guru, and here he is to wrap up this crazy week. Bob, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, Tess, what a week, huh?
Unbelievable. But let me ask you this. We're more than a year out from the first kind of inklings of a subprime mess, but that was really contained to a very small percentage of the overall mortgages in this country. And here we are on what some are calling the brink of financial collapse.
Well, subprime, you mentioned the magic word there, and I think it's a case, don't put your eggs all in one basket. A lot of the investment banks, a lot of other big investment firms put their money in subprimes, even though most of us are still paying the mortgage. In a lot of cases, that's what's causing the problem.
And throughout the banking sector. I mean, this is not just investments. This is not just retail banking. This is everywhere. And I want to give you a bit of a composite here. I call her Sally Investor and
okay.
see what kind of advice you might have for her. Let's say she banks with Washington Mutual. She's got some stock holdings with Lehman, or did. Her company 401k is with Merrill Lynch. She has a few annuities with AIG. Oh, and by the way, her mortgage was backed by Freddie Mac.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to her about her astrology. but
no, but
seriously,
you would think that this is diverse.
Yeah. In almost all of those cases, there is sort of this network of safety nets that should offer a lot of protection. Now, in some cases, there is a problem. For example, if you had Lehman Brothers stock, then it's gone.
Right.
Okay. If you even had bonds in Lehman Brothers, they're talking about maybe 60 to 80 cents on the dollar return on those. So that could be a problem. Then you have the protection of an agency like the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, SIPC, which has moved in to help out in what they call the orderly transfer of those accounts from Lehman Brothers to Barclays Capital, which is talking about buying their assets.
All right. I want to ask you something that has been bugging me all week, which is, as I said, this has been coming down the pike for a while, and we've had massive red lights going off on this whole crisis. And since then, all of these financial companies have had all kinds of tools that they could have used to help fix the situation, including getting money from the Fed. And apparently Lehman Brothers didn't even bother. Why?
Well, there's talk that some of that was just plain hubris. I can take you back, though, to January of this year. John Thayne, the CEO of Merrill Lynch, was talking about trying to get a handle on what all of these mortgage securities were really worth.
We're optimistic that as the market starts to open up and actually trades really occur, that we can actually sell these things at or near where they're marked. So the intention was to mark them where we could sell them. I hope we do, in fact, see some trading happen.
Guess what happened?
Well, trading didn't happen, but I have to say, listening to that financial gobbledygook, it sounds to me like the banks didn't know the value of their holdings. How can they expect us to trust them with our money?
That's a good question. The answer lies on Wall Street, and they're scrambling to come up with it to rebuild investor confidence right now.
All right. Marketplace's Bob Moon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tess.
And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Keep your questions coming during this time of financial uncertainty. We will have more answers on next week's program. In the meantime, check our website, marketplace.org, for the latest developments. Chris and I will be engaging you in conversation about the crisis on our respective blogs. And tune in next time for a look at how self-employed people are dealing with healthcare costs.
When we received this latest increase, it was numbing. I can't possibly work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to pay for it.
Marketplace Money is produced by Nancy Fargali with Stephen Hoffman, Eve Troh, and the rest of the Marketplace staff. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thriven.com.
American Public Media.